Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Marketing Cafe. Gateway is Central Iowa's premier good food store and brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate, personalized service. If you're looking for quality foods with a community focus, check out Gateway Marketing Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe's been covering all of that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Contact Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. Hey, thanks to the Des Moines Iver Session for our bumper music, and let's get rolling. So, I want to share a couple stories from the final week of my Save America March, and just some kind of reflections on the experience. So anyway, I think it was the second or third to last day in Warren County. Rural Warren County, beautiful. I mean, everywhere I went, there's so much beauty in rural Iowa. You got to come and see it to believe it. Anyway, I'm walking along this gravel road, and there's a little stand. That's just a few feet wide, a few feet tall. And it's displaying eggs, peppers, pumpkins, cinnamon rolls, of course, and what else? Cookies. And, you know, I'm reading the sign about what's for sale and how much it costs and all that. There's nobody out there, just a little stand by itself on the side of the road. And a guy pulls up in a Jeep. And he knows the person who owns the stand. He has no idea who I am. But he says, hey, I had an injury earlier this year. I can't walk. Can you do me a favor and put this money in that pay here box and pull me out a dozen eggs? Guy doesn't know me from Adam. and he knows the owner very well, apparently. But he asked me to do that for him. I said, sure, I can do that, of course. So I pull out a dozen eggs, and I hand that to him, put the money in the box. And we get to talking. And he tells me I tell him why I'm walking. And he has heard my name before, apparently. He tells me that he served in the Marines. He's got a son now. He's very proud of his son, who's doing a very similar line of work in the Marines that he did when he was that age. He's not a Trump fan at all, and he's particularly appalled about what's going on with the East Wing of the White House, the demolition of the of that significant chunk of the house to build Trump's ballroom. So you know, I share in some of the other concerns I have about the Trump administration regarding what I see as significant violations of the Constitution. And the guy agrees with me all across the board. He also tells me, you know, he farms a bit. He's got some soybeans, some corn. He's been doing a lot of that for many years. And he's a gun owner. You know, he doesn't have these semi-automatic weapons, but he has guns and he keeps them safe. But he agrees with me 100% that violence is not the way to address our current predicament. He wants to see us address it peacefully, but he wants to see us fight. You know, and then as I'm leaving, he says, but be careful about my neighbors. He says, be careful, just down the road there. You gotta watch out for them. I goes, why? Well, he's a friend of mine, okay? But he's a big Trump supporter. I says, okay. And he'll talk your ear off. He'll just talk your ear off. I says, why? I don't mind the conversation, I said. But, But he says, yeah, be careful of him. But it wasn't be careful of him, he's a dangerous person. It's be careful of him, he'll talk your ear off. Anyway, I actually was, I was hoping the guy might be home, but I didn't find him home. So I missed that opportunity. But that was a very entertaining and enlightening conversation. The very last conversation I had on this march was walking from Norwalk to Des Moines. And a big chunk of that was along the bike trail. And I'm very familiar with this bike trail. I've been on it many times. And it goes through the Willow Creek Golf Course. And at one point, right on the trail, is a bench. It's a little kind of a stone bench. And I decided, I've sat there many times before when I was biking. And so I plopped down on that bench, as I always do when I take a break. I take my shoes off, give those little doggies a little break. I'm sitting there eating a banana, and this guy pulls up, and there were a lot of golfers. It's a beautiful day, golfers everywhere, place lousy with them. And then he pulls up and just kind of stops in front of me and looks at me. And I could tell he was kind of like, what are you doing here? That sort of thing. Maybe it was the shoes off, maybe because I didn't have a bike, maybe because I'm eating a banana. I don't know, but he looked very critical of me. Well, yeah, what are you doing here? He says. I says, well, I'm walking, I said. Okay, where are you walking from? He says, well, from Des Moines, 220 miles back to Des Moines. And he looks at me very suspiciously. But when I told him why I'm walking, I said, I'm walking to try to, you know, save our democracy. And I said, you know, I told him why I didn't think things were going very well. And I said, what do you think? Are we in trouble? He says, no. He says, everything's going fine. We're going in the right direction. And you know what? First person I've heard this entire trip who said everything's fine. Even the Cuban guy didn't think everything was fine. So I asked him what he thought of Trump violating the Constitution regarding judicial decisions, regarding decisions by the Congress to spend money, not spending it or redirecting it in contradiction to what the Constitution says is the role of Congress. And he says, no, oh, that's fine. There's nothing anti-constitutional about that. And I'm like confused as to how he can even say that. I ask him, well, what about blowing up ships in the Caribbean? What about blowing up boats? I mean, we could search those boats, board them, search them, find out for sure whether they're carrying drugs and present the evidence instead of blowing them up and in the process destroying the evidence. Well, he's fine with that as well. I bring up the issue of soybeans, which was the issue that I think many people I met along the way who were concerned about. He's kind of indifferent to that problem. And, you know, my impression, I don't like to make false assumptions about people, but you inevitably make some judgment. And the guy seemed to be very wealthy, very comfortable. And again, I know not everybody on the golf course is wealthy and comfortable, but this guy, he looked like he had that part. I mean, lots of confidence, you know, maybe in his late 40s, early 50s, I suppose. And as he's walking away to go tee off for the next hole, he turns around to me and says, hey, by the way, Trump is going to serve a third term, you know. And I say, that would definitely be a violation of the Constitution. He says, no, because it won't be because we're going to change the Constitution. And he says, then you can hear it from, you can say you heard it from me first. Well, actually, I haven't heard it from him first. I've heard it from Steve Bannon and other people, too. But I want to share that with you later. But, you know, I had to get the last word in, right? Of course I did. So as he's walking away, I yell out. I mean, not angrily. I just yell out so he can hear me because he's getting far away at that point. I said, hey, I want to thank you, by the way. You're the first person in 4 weeks and 220 miles of walking, first person I've met who didn't think the country was heading in the wrong direction. So thank you for that. the guy's name, he introduced himself. His name was Tom. You know, I get the strong feeling he's part of what we call the 1%. Anyway, I don't know. But to deny that there are constitutional violations going on, I mean, this isn't the first president to violate the Constitution. This isn't the first president to overdo the use of executive orders. But he's taking it to a whole new level. So, I'm glad the walk is over. I'm glad to be home. I miss my wonderful wife. I miss our plants, our animals, my piano. I miss all the things that I normally do, but you know, I think I felt the sacrifice involved in this was worth it. And I do think it was worth it. It was great to have three people, Kathy being one of them, three people join me for the final couple miles of the march. The other two were Sarah Spain, who was the logistics coordinator for three of the marches I've organized, and Miriam Kashia, who, of course, walked every step of the way with me and 50 other people, roughly, across the U.S. back in 2014. So also delighted that nine people came to Lua Brewing to kind of celebrate the end of the walk. I will say I was really, really disappointed in the mainstream media, but I should never be disappointed in them, and I should never be surprised. You know, they talk about democracy being in peril. I appreciate that. But when it comes to people actually doing something to address it, where are they? I tried to talk with our Des Moines Register and three TV stations three different times each. Crickets. Nothing. And I will point out, too, they also offer minimal coverage of the No Kings rally. They offer minimal coverage or no coverage of other actions as well. You know, they pretend or at least say they're concerned about where democracy is heading. But when it comes time to actually show what people are doing to try to respond to that threat, they ain't there. They aren't there. And that is the nature of the corporate media. So I will say the small town press, small towns I went through, a lot of them still had a newspaper. One of them had, Afton, had a newspaper owned by a gal in that town. And she was, you know, she wasn't making any money doing it, but she wasn't losing money either. She was keeping it going. And good for her. Good for her. And good for the people in the other small towns that were keeping their newspapers alive and running. And thank you to them for taking the time to sit down and talk with me and to write stories about what I'm doing and why. So, you know, I think the march was worth it. You know, it was, I will say, I should have done a heck of a lot more advance work. For every minute you spend walking, there should be multiple minutes spent organizing the logistics around that walk. You know, people to walk with you, the press contacts, overnight stops, meetings, all that. There should have been much more involved with that. And I didn't have time. Anyway, note to self, make time next time. So, you know, next steps, I mean, I'm going to keep reaching out to people. You know, I really encourage everyone to do, they do not demonize, quote, the other side, because there is no other side. We are all in this together. And, you know, just if you have a habit, if you're inclined to want to say that all Trump people are dumb or all people on the left are loonies, whatever your choice of demeaning term is, don't do it. Reach out. And I tell you, I'm going to make, that's one thing I'm going to do in the aftermath of this march is I'm going to, you know, connect with a whole bunch of Trump voters that I haven't seen or talked with for a while and get together for, quote, coffee or, quote, a beer. And, you know, just kind of catch up and see how they feel about the way things are going. And maybe I'll learn something from them as well. But I hope they can, you know, take my experience from this walk and maybe evaluate in their own point of view where we're heading and why it's a problem. Anyway, so, I do think right now, to me, the most important thing that I can be doing, and maybe other people feel this as well, is to be putting a lot of time and effort into the upcoming election, the 2026 election. Trump has said before that, you know, you won't have to vote again after I'm in. And I worry about that. I really worry about that. And I see some of the things happening, and I worry that, yeah, we are headed toward the reality that we may lose our franchise. We may lose our ability to vote for the people we want to represent us. And I want to talk more about that and about how all dictators currently and throughout history, when they hang on to power, they refuse to relinquish it. We'll talk about that. And I will play you a clip from Steve Bannon when we come back from a short break on the Fallon Forum.
Thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our partners, including Catholic Peace Ministry, whose focus is on nuclear disarmament, the war between Israel and Hamas, the war in Ukraine, and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. Thanks also to Western Optometry. Dr. Joel Westerman and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Western Optometry. All right, so this interview with Steve Bannon, interviewed by Zanny Minton-Bedos of The Economist, which is a solidly, you know, pro-status quo publication. But I assume that most people listening to this interview will be as concerned as I was when I first heard it.
He's going to get a third term. So Trump 28, Trump is going to be president in 28. And people just ought to get accommodated with that.
So what about the 22nd Amendment?
There's many different alternatives. At the appropriate time, we'll lay out what the plan is. But there's a plan. We had longer odds in 16 and longer odds in 24 than we got in 28. And President Trump will be the president of the United States. And the country needs him to be president of the United States. We have to finish what we started. Trump is a vehicle. I know this will drive you guys crazy, but he's a vehicle of divine providence. He's an instrument. He's very imperfect. He's not churchy, not particularly religious, but he's an instrument of divine will. And you can tell this of how he's pulled this off. We need him for at least one more term, right? And he'll get that in 28.
You're not driving me crazy. I'm really I'm trying to understand the coherence of the things you've just told me. On the one hand, you've said the Constitution is fit for purpose. Secondly, you've said that President Trump needs another term, even though the 22nd Amendment makes pretty clear that he cannot have another term.
Why does it make that clear?
Because he's on his second term already.
At some point in time, we will make sure we go through Zanny and define all those terms.
But you will be undermining the spirit of that amendment, even if you find some way around it.
If the American people, with the mechanisms we have, put Trump back in office, are the American people tearing up the Constitution? Would that be tearing up? Would the American people be going against the spirit of the Constitution, ma'am?
I think yes, actually, because what you will end up with is a populist justification for a quasi-dictatorship.
That's not true at all. A dictatorship. Did you just see the compromises he had to make on the Big Beautiful Bill? You see the compromises he has to do on everything, on accommodating Zelensky, on what President Trump? President Trump is nothing but a series of negotiations to kind of keep this thing rolling forward, where he's having trade-offs all the time.
Steve, you've just spent the last 20 minutes telling me we have to smash the other side. There's no room for debate. There's no room for compromise. We must smash them. And now you're telling me this is a negotiation. I mean, that's...
No.
I guess that's why it seems to me some kind of tension there.
First off, the only way President Trump wins in 2028 and continues to stay in office is by the will of the American people, okay? And the will of the American people is what the Constitution embodies. And so I think we're going to be in good hands there. We need to finish what we started.
So I don't know how that is anything other than just extremely frightening. I mean, the will of the American people, and that's basically the will of Trump. Trump clearly, yes, he absolutely wants to be president/dictator until he dies. I mean, he's in this for the long haul. Yeah, they're going to try to find a way to ignore the provision on limiting presidential terms to two. But we've already got all these mechanisms in place to undercut the will of the American people. Citizens United, where unlimited spending by billionaires can basically determine election outcomes. You know, how is that consistent with the will of the American people? How is gerrymandering consistent with the will of the American people when you cut up districts so that you only get certain outcomes, predictable outcomes? You know, what about restrictions on voting, regarding voting identification? You can use a military ID, but you can't use a college ID. I mean, it depends. It's different from state to state, but the bottom line is there are all these ways being put in place to keep the will of the American people from truly being realized. The Electoral College, which again goes way back, but how is that consistent with the will of the American people when you give undue precedence to a certain constituency and at the expense of the majority? You know, cutting back when polls are open, restrictions on early voting. There's a long list of ways in which, quote, the will of the American people are already being corrupted. And if you want to take it a step further and elect a president for a third time, remember we had FDR serve three terms, or he tried to serve three terms before he died in the third one. But the, we fixed that. We changed the Constitution so that wouldn't happen again. And now we have a guy who thinks it should happen again, but for a totally different reason. I think Republicans know that their trifecta is in trouble. And so they are trying to do everything possible to make sure that the 2026 election goes Trump's way. And that will give them the power they need to make sure he's president and, you know, reelected in 2028. And at that point, I'm going to put the word election in quotes because it's really not election anymore. It's a coronation, as we see in Russia with Putin, as we see in China with Xi. You know, I mean, is that where we're heading? Are we becoming one of these countries that just goes ahead with the leader and really does away with any legitimate elections? So right now, though, there's a process underway, and I think most people are probably familiar with it by this point, of mid-decade gerrymandering, started by Texas. And, you know, this came at a very inopportune time because there were states like California, and there were other states too, but California in particular had created an independent redistricting commission. They agreed to redraw congressional maps more fairly. And then in 2020, Virginia did the same. It was Virginia that did the same thing. They did it through a vote of the people. And so now because of what Texas has done, both states are like, well, we're gonna play this game and try to carve out Democratic districts. So, I think close to a third or half of the states are trying to do this now. Florida, Louisiana and Kansas are all going hog wild and trying to make sure they've got Republican districts, new ones created. I think Ohio may try it as well. Indiana has been pressured by the president and the administration to also carve out a new Republican district. To their credit, to the credit of Republicans in Indiana, they're saying, no, we're not going to go there. So that's a small victory there. But it's a race to the bottom here, and it's hard to say how it's going to come out. I mean, California could create five new Democratic districts. When I say new, I don't mean new congressional districts. I mean taking enough votes away from five current Republican districts where Democrats have a much better chance to win them. Republicans know that they've got a tough road to hoe this year, in 2026, I should say. And so they're trying everything they can, but it might backfire. One state that has, I think, the gold standard in terms of redistricting is Iowa. We've had that since 1981. It's done by a nonpartisan process. The Legislative Services Bureau puts together the map. And I know the guy personally who's done that for the last three elections. I worked with him when I was up there. And they do a really, really good, fair job. And the Constitution of Iowa says you have to follow county lines. You have to also try to achieve as balanced a population in each of the, now we have four districts, as possible. And that's tough to do, you know. You can't consider political considerations. You can't consider where current lawmakers live. And so, you know, for example, when redistricting occurred in 2002, I was put into a district where I lost about 70% of my old district. So I can tell you for sure, there was no political consideration in that at all. It's just the way it came out. I was able to win anyhow, but, you know, oftentimes you get situations where two lawmakers of the same party are put into the same district, and that gets fun and interesting, but it's fair. It's done based on shifts in population. They start on one corner of the state, build it out, again, following county lines. And if you look at our map, I mean, if you look at a map from North Carolina, which is one of the worst states, or Delaware on the Democratic side, or Illinois, there are offenders on both sides of the aisle. If you look at some of those states that are heavily gerrymandered, those districts are ridiculous. They look comical. You look at Iowa's map, it's like four blocks. Boom, 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 boom. North, northwest, northeast, southwest, southeast. It's very logical, and it makes it more competitive. Now, there's some concern here that Republicans have the trifecta in Iowa. They might try to change the redistricting law to make it easier for Republicans to win. Now, you might look at that and say, well, that's silly. The Republicans already control all four seats in the U.S. Congress in Iowa. Well, there are three of them that are competitive. And right now, there are districts. Remember, there used to be three Democrats, not that long ago, three Democrats and one Republican in Iowa in terms of the congressional delegation. That could easily go back that way, especially this year. You know, it's always the case where in the off year of a presidential term, the party not in power is the one that's likely to gain seats. And so while you have states all over the country that are gerrymandering themselves to death and creating basically a blue state or a red state, Iowa remains, in theory, a purple state. And you could see this, you could see these three districts that are currently held by Republicans going Democrat. Now, again, I think Republicans here are aware of that. They're probably getting pressure from the Trump administration to consider ways in which they can make sure that those districts are more Republican friendly. And I've looked into this a bit. I've thought about it a lot. And I think it's very possible that they might take a shot at it this session. But it's possible, but probably a long shot, because the redistricting process is legislative. It's based on legislation. So it could be changed in one session. But it would still have to comply with provisions of the Constitution that require following county lines, that require getting a balanced, you know, population. But there is one, you know, I hope no Republican legislators are listening to this conversation, or honestly, maybe they've already thought about this, but you could take a district that runs from Des Moines, Polk County, and go four counties to the east, Jasper, Powashik, Iowa, and then Johnson County, which is very, very Democratic. Johnson County is Iowa City. And then go one county north to Lynn, and that would create a solidly blue district. You would just concede, Republicans would concede that will always be a blue district. And the rest of the state in that case would have a more significant Republican tilt. The problem there is you've got a district now that has 971,000 people. And for the most part, districts right now are about 800,000 people in each Iowa congressional district. So that puts it quite a bit over the balance required in the Constitution. But again, with all the games being played by politicians, especially on the Republican side, they may try to find a way to get out of that. We'll see. So this really comes at a terrible time because, again, I want to praise California and Virginia for trying to create a redistricting process that is more fair, that is less prone to political manipulation. And I would love to see that become the law of the land across the country. Again, I don't always praise Iowa. We have one of the highest cancer rates in the country. We have some of the worst water in the country. We have lots of problems. We have a great redistricting process. And you know, it might hold, but I'm concerned that as Republicans look at how they're going to hold on to the House, and they see more and more states that are led by Democratic legislatures, more and more Democratic-led states trying to create their own new maps as a way to balance out what's happening in Texas and Florida and elsewhere, that in the end you might get an equal a balance of new districts that are pretty much the same as they are now in terms of the number of districts that lean Republican and Democrat. What you'll have, though, is states that are so solidly Republican or Democrat that, yeah, you'll only further the division in this country. Trump talks about Democratic cities, Democratic agencies, Democratic programs. Well, if this keeps going the way it is, you will have more quote, Democratic or more Republican communities throughout the nation. Again, I hope Iowa's system holds. There was some muttering about changing it a couple of years ago, but I think it's probably going to hold, although I won't be surprised to see some Yahoo try to change it. And I won't be surprised if there's pressure coming from Washington, D.C. to do that. So, yeah, and all this comes down to one thing, folks. It comes down to what Steve Bannon said earlier, Trump's third term. Or I think what he said was at least his third term. I mean, Bannon sees Trump as continuing to move forward. I mean, until he dies, I guess, or until he appoints a successor. Who's that going to be? J.D. Vance? Maybe one of his kids? I don't know. So I want to play this clip for you one more time because I want it to stick in because it is truly horrifying. And it is where I think this administration wants to head and where we need to push back against. Here it is one more time. And then after that, I'm going out to a break. I'll be back shortly after that.
He's going to get a third term. So Trump 28, Trump is going to be president in 28. And people just ought to get accommodated with that.
So but what about the 22nd Amendment?
There's many different alternatives. At the appropriate time, we'll lay out what the plan is. But there's a plan. We had longer odds in 16 and longer odds in 24 than we got in 28. And President Trump will be the president of the United States. And the country needs him to be president of the United States. We have to finish what we started. Trump is a vehicle. I know this will drive you guys crazy, but he's a vehicle of divine providence. He's an instrument. He's very imperfect. He's not churchy, not particularly religious, but he's an instrument of divine will. And you can tell this of how he's pulled this off. We need him for at least one more term, right? And he'll get that in 28.
You're not driving me crazy. I'm really I'm trying to understand the coherence of the things you've just told me. On the one hand, you've said the Constitution is fit for purpose. Secondly, you've said that President Trump needs another term, even though the 22nd Amendment makes pretty clear that he cannot have another term.
Why does it make that clear?
Because he's on his second term already.
At some point in time, we will make sure we go through Zanny and define all those terms.
But you will be undermining the spirit of that amendment, even if you find some way around it.
If the American people, with the mechanisms we have, put Trump back in office, are the American people tearing up the Constitution? Would that be tearing up?
Well,
would the American people be going against the spirit of the Constitution, ma'am?
I think yes, actually, because what you will end up with is a populist justification for a quasi-dictatorship.
That's not true at all. Trump is a dictatorship. Did you just see the compromises he had to make on the Big Beautiful Bill? You see the compromises he has to do on everything, on accommodating Zelensky, on what President Trump? President Trump is nothing but a series of negotiations to kind of keep this thing rolling forward, where he's having trade-offs all the time.
Steve, you've just spent the last 20 minutes telling me we have to smash the other side. There's no room for debate. There's no room for compromise. We must smash them. And now you're telling me this is a negotiation. I mean, that's...
No.
I guess that's why it seems to me some kind of tension
first
there.
Off, the only way President Trump wins in 2028 and continues to stay in office is by the will of the American people, okay? And the will of the American people is what the Constitution embodies. And so I think we're going to be in good hands there. We need to finish what we started.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you here, folks. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Story County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Clisham asked that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. So I imagine many of you, like me, are concerned about what's going to happen when SNAP benefits expire. I mean, the government is shut down for, what, a month? Now, probably when you're listening to this program, more than a month. 41 million Americans are very likely to run out of, you know, some level of food support. Again, you know, I don't know how. And again, I don't want to get into the conversation about, well, it's Republicans' fault because they're the majority. Well, it's the Democrats' fault. I think some of the arguments being made by Republicans about it being the Democrats' fault are ridiculous. But I mean, Democrats could choose to end this if they wanted to. I don't want to get into that conversation. I think something has to happen. And ideally it would happen with compromise and dialogue. And not this intractable position that both parties have put themselves in. It is interesting, too, that you know where the real priorities are when you see what does get funded despite the shutdown. So you probably heard that a rich donor, a friend of Trump's, unnamed at first, stepped forward with $130 million to pay the troops, because paying the troops, that's important. Feeding the poor, not so much. But, at first it was unknown as to who that was. Well, apparently it was Timothy Mellon, somebody who's given hundreds of millions to Trump's campaigns. So for him, $130 million to pay the troops wasn't a big deal. I'll bet he could also cough up $130 million to help feed the 41 million Americans who are going to be out of food benefits shortly. So let's look at a couple states here. Kentucky. There are over 500,000 Kentucky residents who are likely to have a hard time finding enough food once November rolls around because of SNAP running out of money. So on top of that, Kentucky is also decreasing these small cash payments they give to roughly 15,000 extremely low-income families. That's, again, a drop in a bucket, 15,000 of 500,000. But those are going to run out as well. So, and then you got over in Tennessee, Governor Bill Lee. He's, of course, criticized congressional Democrats for failing to end the government shutdown. And I'm going to go back to a pox on both houses. He's not offering any help from Tennessee to help pick up the slack. But in some states, elected officials are indeed demanding that SNAP benefits be issued at the state level. Nevada. U.S. Rep. Steve Horsford last week sent a letter to the governor urging him to do everything within his power to make sure that Nevadans continue to receive food stamps, meaning SNAP, including the possibility of calling a special session. We'll see if that happens or not, but at least there is someone speaking up in favor of that in that state. There's also attorneys general from a bunch of states who have sent a letter to the USDA director, Brooke Rollins, just trying to get some clarity on why, apparently there's been some, slowness in funding even existing SNAP benefits and why that's happening. The letter, wants to know the legal basis for pausing the benefits, and also what happens when the shutdown continues into November. So at least there are some people that are trying to get questions answered and trying to get, trying to make some assurance that we're not going to see people go hungry. But I think it's likely to happen. I mean, I don't see any way around this right now unless there is some breakthrough. And I suspect it's going to have to come from the Democratic side, to be honest with you. I don't know. If I were the holder of the magic wand, meaning Chuck Schumer or Jeffries, I would say, okay, we're gonna drop the whole conversation about Medicaid. As much as I hate to do that, and I do think what Republicans did to Medicaid funding is terrible. But just so maybe they can save face and something can get done, look at the SNAP issue. And maybe a couple other areas where enough people are affected. 500,000 in Kentucky alone. Where people are impacted in red and blue states alike. And maybe not just SNAP, but add something else to that list. Let's get compromise on achieving some level of support to keep these programs going, and we'll help you pass your budget bill. There's no perfect solution here, folks. There's no perfect solution. I don't like anything I just said, but something has to happen. Something has to happen. And then we're not going to get there with the current leadership in the U.S. House and Senate, which is not interested in compromise, which is not interested, really not interested in keeping government going, except for when it comes to, building a ballroom or funding the troops or making sure we have enough, money to send a huge military force to the Caribbean Sea. Which I'll get to, by the way. But first, Garrett Graff. I'm not that familiar with him. I'm just getting familiar with him. He writes a blog. He's a prof. I can't remember where. But I appreciate what he had to say about ICE recently. And I'll just quote you from his recent blog. It turns out, if you're hiring for a pariah agency, meaning ICE, using nakedly fascist and racist messaging, and recruiting for a job where you get to be jeered by your neighbors and are so hated that you literally refuse to show your face, and trying to attract people who will get excited to cosplay as a Navy SEAL in full tactical gear to dress up like you're taking Fallujah while facing down people in inflatable frog costumes, and wrestling to the ground hardworking roofers in the Home Depot parking lot, America's best, brightest, the most fit don't apply. That's an entire paragraph that's one sentence. What he's saying is, I think it's really colorful and I enjoyed reading it. Hopefully you enjoyed hearing it. But a lot of the people who were most qualified to do the work demanded by ICE aren't applying. Some of them probably out of principle. Some of them probably because they've got decent enough jobs doing something useful instead of, tackling inflatable people dressed in inflatable frog costumes. But a lot of them don't qualify because Americans are not in good shape. Again, some of us are, but a lot of people are struggling with obesity, heart failure, various diseases related to the horrible food that we've allowed to become popular in this country. So go RFK on that account, but otherwise stop right there. Yeah, we'll see what happens. What's happening in Chicago, I'm getting daily reports from, regular reports from my contacts in Chicago, and what's happening there with ICE is absolutely appalling. You cannot look at the videos or read the stories or hear what's going on there and not agree. I don't see how you can think anything positive about what's happening there or what's happening in the Caribbean Sea. So the U.S. now has, we have over 10, and again, budget shutdown notwithstanding, we found ways of making sure we have 10,000 troops in the Gulf of Mexico, there I said it. We also have warships and aircraft. And one aircraft, the USS Gerald Ford. It's the world's biggest warship. Yes. And it can host up to 90 attack planes and attack helicopters. And that is either now on its way to the Caribbean or perhaps already there, depending on when you're listening to this program. And let's recount what's happened so far. The U.S. has blown up 10 boats. We've killed 43 people. We don't really know much about them. They're from Venezuela. They're from Colombia. And we don't know whether they were really carrying drugs because we blew up all the evidence. And, you know, that should say volumes right there. If you aren't willing to verify that the people you are attacking are indeed guilty of the problem you charge them with, then maybe they're not. Maybe you're making that up. Maybe you're looking for, you know, maybe you just want to blow them up and use that as an escalation toward greater intervention. And that's what we're not sending 10,000 troops and the world's biggest aircraft carrier and 90 planes and helicopters to the Caribbean Sea if we don't intend to do something. Sure, we could just be like showing off. This could be just sort of another version of the military parade in Washington, D.C. Look at us. Look at how big we are. Look at how bad we are. Look at our planes, our aircraft carrier, our 10,000 troops, which we can somehow still pay for despite the government shutdown. It's hard to say what they're going to do, but I'm going to take some guesses. But let me say one more thing about the blowing up of boats. That's never happened before. America has never before bombed vessels and basically executed passengers out of mere suspicion. There has to be evidence. The Trump administration is absolutely ignoring that historical precedent. It is so clearly wrong. All right, so I want to play a clip from CBS News for you here, folks, and then we'll talk about it.
On Friday, the Trump administration announced it's sending an aircraft carrier strike group to the waters off South America. It's an escalation in the administration's efforts to target what it says are drug traffickers. On Friday, the 10th strike against a suspected drug-running boat was carried out. CBS News senior national correspondent Charlie Daggett has more on what this military buildup could mean.
The deployment of the Ford aircraft carrier and its escorting warships to the Caribbean is the strongest signal yet the U.S. is preparing to widen its airstrike campaign in the region. With 10 strikes on suspected drug boats already, including one that allegedly killed six narco terrorists, the Trump administration has warned Venezuela and its cartels that striking land is next.
We will treat you like we have treated Al-Qaeda. We will find you. We will map your networks, we will hunt you down, and we will kill you.
The Navy's largest ship, the Ford, is stocked with F-18 fighter jets, surveillance aircraft, helicopters, and 4,500 sailors. Already in the region are eight other warships and 10,000 troops. Corey Shockey served on the National Security Council under George W. Bush.
Are they preparing for war?
The president was willing to strike the Iranian nuclear infrastructure. The president's been willing to make these strikes in both the Pacific and the Caribbean. So I don't think we should rule it out.
President Trump has made it clear he wants Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro removed from power with a $50 million reward for information leading to his arrest. Maduro has been holding his own drills with live fire exercises and recently warned his military has 5,000 Russian-made anti-aircraft missiles ready to fire. But he appealed for a peaceful resolution.
Just peace, forever, forever, forever. Peace forever.
President Trump said Maduro has offered concessions.
He has offered everything. He's offered everything. You're right. You know why? Because he doesn't want to around with the United States.
The Trump administration began striking alleged drug boats off the coast of Colombia, too, and introduced new sanctions on the country, including the president, Gustavo Petro, and his family, saying he allowed drug cartels to flourish and refused to stop it.
Okay, so he wants Maduro gone. Trump wants Maduro gone. He basically wants regime change. And I'm wondering what Tulsi Gabbard thinks about that. I mean, you know, that was her whole thing, anti-regime change war. Hillary Clinton, the queen of the warmongers. Well, now she's working for the king of the warmongers. This is he wants regime change, but I think he also wants Venezuelan oil. He wants easy access to that. I think it's more than that, though. I think he wants complete domination of the Western Hemisphere. You know, and maybe he'll let Putin recapture all the former Soviet republics. Maybe he'll let, you know, China continue to dominate that part of Asia. It seems like we're moving into a new era of empire. And I would not be surprised to see Trump. I think it's pretty clear he's going to mess with Venezuela. I think it's going to go beyond that. I think we're looking at Colombia, maybe other places. I don't know where it's going to end, but it's really bad right now. But I will say this: I was really encouraged by what Robert Reich wrote recently about how the 7 million people who poured into the streets, you know, last week. That's huge. That's 2% of the U.S. population. You know, we're seeing this big surge of people who understand that we're not going in the right direction, and we're seeing airports refusing to show Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem's propaganda video. We're seeing universities who are refusing to sign on to Trump's extortion compact. His destruction of the East Wing, as I found on my walk, is hugely unpopular. We're seeing what most American news outlets, even Fox, refuse to sign on to Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's, you know, media loyalty oath. We're seeing pushback left and right, and I think this is encouraging. I think this is very encouraging. I got to take a short break, folks. When we come back, Kathy Burns is going to join me. We're going to be talking about how the first fall frost has moved back quite a bit in cities across the U.S. Back in a minute on the Fallon Forum. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design build services for high performance, low maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you here. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, wherever you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay negotiated fee basis. Contact DavidDrakeFamilyPsychiatry.com. Kathy Burns with me, and we are talking about the gradually, or actually really quickly moving, first freeze date.
Mm-hmm. And it's later in the fall every year.
Yeah. Which is nice for gardening on some levels.
Yeah.
But it's concerning.
Well, we're really in tune with that first frost and especially freeze date, because as we get closer to time to plant garlic, we watch it closely because we have to get that garlic in the ground before the freeze and cover it up with straw and protect it. But it's really obvious to people who do
grow food, tend the land in any way, that these patterns are shifting. So we're going to talk today about how these dates are
how much shifting,
indicators of some trouble.
How much shifting is going on?
Well, according to some data from Climate Central, quote, an independent group of scientists and communicators who research and report the facts about our changing climate and how it affects people's lives, say that between 1970 and 2023, that's a 53-year span, the first freeze date has moved an average of 11 days later into the year.
Yeah.
Also, fall season temperatures have increased by an average of 2.4 degrees Fahrenheit across the contiguous United States since 1970.
I will not be surprised if October here in Des Moines is the warmest October we've ever had. I tell you, the first week of my Save America March, I was dying in the heat. It was 85 to 90.
And we have skirted close to, in Des Moines, a frost date. And now we're way above it for our lows at night. So it's pretty weird. There are serious effects of late freezes. It can disrupt the ecological cues that nature has for starting and shutting down growing processes. Okay. For instance, when plants go into kind of hibernate and they need to have that cold period. This applies to farms, gardens, forests, pollinators, and other plants don't know when to go hibernate. Bees could go in too early in the year.
Right, and one thing about bees may start, because it's warmer, they're more active, they may start eating into their winter food supply earlier than normal.
And they don't have pollen anymore out there. Nectar to go collect. There aren't many blossoms out because of less sun. So for agriculture, it means long active seasons for insect pests, extended weed and disease pressure on crops, and fruit growers notice a reduced chilling hour time period, and that impacts yields and quality of the fruit.
In the next season.
In general, and beyond agriculture, we have extended demands on our cooling systems, AC units in cars and homes, etc. Yeah. Extended risk of wildfires, allergies lingering later into the fall.
I've heard people complain about that, and I'm fortunate that I don't suffer from those kind of allergies. My only allergy is bee venom.
Bee venom.
Which is a great allergy to have when you're a beekeeper,
I think a little allergy issue, but nothing to medicate for anything. Another disruption in the general biosphere is disruption to bird migration patterns. They could be not migrating at the right time because it feels hunky-dory, and then suddenly it's a quick shift into winter, and they could be left.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of noticed geese migrations. But those are more obvious. But, they don't really migrate anymore.
Not out of Des Moines or Central Iowa. Stay here. They winter over.
But that's not just because of the changing climate. It's also because of the proliferation of ponds. Corporate ponds that have a nice sprinkler in the middle to keep it
free of ice all year round. But robins used to go away and then come back in the spring.
Cardinals as well.
And now we don't see robins as year-round, but they are here, not in as large numbers. But these are all just changes that can really throw us off our guard and cause some major irritations and problems.
And to those who continue to deny climate change, and I know it's a really small universe, but you look at the graphs, and it's happening. It is absolutely undeniable that that frost dates are now a lot later than they were back in 1970.
Well, we've got to get a handle on it.
Yeah.
So we can keep eating and loving our food and our earth in the future.
Kathy, thanks for joining me. Hey, thanks to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Detterman, Charles Goldman, Kathy Burns, and myself, Ed Fallon. Thanks also to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Westrum Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, real estate agent Joe Henry, and Architecture by Synthesis. If you'd like to consider sponsoring this program, Let me know. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners, Catholic Peace Ministry, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. And thanks to the Des Moines Iowa Session for our bumper music. Back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.